You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for October 26th, 2021. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of The Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is a webcast and podcast where we dig deep into the clutter that stands between people and the lives they want to be living. We aim to make sense of where so much stuff comes from in the first place. We offer strategies to slow down the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we choose to keep. We rely heavily on the questions and topic suggestions we get from you, our viewers and listeners.
If you're joining us in the Zoom meeting for the first time, you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let me know that you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. Okay, let's get right to last week's tittle, which was called, "You Really Can't Take It With You."
No, you cannot.
The assignment was to plan ahead for that distant future when some poor soul has to clear your estate. We want to hear from our participants at Zoom and Facebook. Who tackled the tittle? Who did something in the way of planning for where your stuff is going to go and who's going to get it this week? Please let us know in the comments. Nancy on YouTube shared this. "I sent a copy of last week's YouTube video to my kids as a guide to help them when the inevitable happens. In the meantime, I'm trying to make their job easier by donating a bunch of my unused items."
That is awesome, Nancy. So great idea to send them the video to signal to your kids that A, you're thinking about it, B, you're willing to talk about it, C, they can address it in their, you know, when they have a private moment and try to think about what they're going to have to do. And if they're sitting at home going, la, 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 I'm not thinking about my mother passing away, which most children would react that way, of course. If they're not really thinking about it, then this sitting in the video gives them an opportunity to bring it to the top of mind and see if they can get through it and think about it. And maybe it'll start a conversation with the kids, which would be great. And the idea that you're doing your best to thin the herd on their behalf is really wonderful. Everything that you give away is one less thing that they have to manage later. So good for you. And I think that's, I wouldn't have thought to send them the link to the video to let them listen to the video, but what a great idea. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Eclair reports, "Oh boy, I failed miserably."
I wonder in what way.
Well, I think in terms of tackling this week's tittle.
Oh, okay. That's okay. We don't punish anybody.
No, we don't. And we don't expect every tittle to work for everybody. Not everybody's in the place where they're ready or have that particular problem to address. Jane says, "I already have an estate plan, will and trust. This week, I created a document called Belonging Distribution. In it, I'm listing specific suggestions for where to give and donate various categories of belongings. It will go to my executor."
What a great idea. That's excellent. And that means that they don't have to think about it. They can just say, "Mom wanted this stuff to go over here." And if you make big bundles of things to go, like a haul of this stuff can go to that charity, then you're just giving them a direction they don't have to think about. And so I'm sure they will find that very, very helpful. The equivalent of that for me was when Mother died, we found a list of things that she wanted in specific places in the funeral rites. We had an Episcopal service and she wanted you know, this hymn in this place and this prayer in that place. And she gave us instructions about that. She'd clearly been talking to the priest and been thinking about it. It wasn't complete, but it was enough combined with the conversation she'd had with the priest to give us direction. And then we didn't have to make any choices. We just knew these were choices that Mother made, and we could stop thinking about it. And it was a huge relief in that moment, because we were both so freaked out and distressed and not having to think about it was great. Right. So the idea of giving them a list of here's where you can donate some stuff, and they know that you vote for that place and they don't have to think about it anymore, is a huge, huge relief. And what a great idea. Thanks for doing that for them.
Lise says, planning on having my great grandma's doll and pics to the historical society where she was born.
Oh, that's nice. That's a lovely idea.
Connie says, I took photos of 3 items to ask family members who wants it. Still have to compose email. And then here's
a
great idea that Catherine shared. Catherine said, girlfriend's family put their address labels behind pieces of furniture they wanted.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Instant sticker, right?
Yeah.
All those stickers that you get for free in the mail when people are soliciting charity donations from you. You can use those and go stick them on things, right? That's a great idea.
And another Jane, or the other Jane, said, I had a possible cancer scare, so I wrote pages of information about what goes where, phone numbers, etc. That's Jane in Florida.
Good for you, Jane. That was a good idea. I'm sorry that you had a scare. I hope that everything's okay. And there's nothing like a little shock to get you going, get you addressing this kind of stuff that is going to be an issue for them. So thanks. I'm sure that they'll appreciate that list 100%.
And she says she's fine.
Yay. So, glad to hear it.
Goodness for that. Yes. Okay. Let's get to our main topic, because we have a lot to cover. Some of us love to shop, and stores and online retailers with stuff to sell know how to push our buttons to make the sale. But it's easy for our spaces to get out of balance if we bring home more than we're using up, giving away, getting rid of. Today, we're going to talk about the effects of consumerism on clutter, and we'll offer strategies for resisting the onslaught of advertising messages to right-size your shopping habit.
So I'm just going to say we are now going to bash shopping. So be prepared.
Just a little.
Bash shopping just a little bit.
Gently.
Gently, right? So what is consumerism? At its most basic, consumerism is the idea that human nature includes a desire to obtain and own products beyond our basic needs for food, clothing, and shelter. Some economists, politicians, and business leaders take a very favorable view of consumerism. They advocate for the theory that people make their lives better by consuming products and services that they obtain from the free market, and that high levels of consumption can power a healthy job market and economic growth. At the other end of that philosophical spectrum, there are those who believe that consumerism produces damaging effects on culture, especially local culture, on local economies, on traditional values and ways of life, on the environment, and especially on the well-being of people who live in consumerist societies. Consumerism, for instance, is antithetical to the idea of sustainability. We want to focus our attention today on the intersection between consumerism and our cluttered spaces. Let's look at the psychology of consumerism, how it promotes our tendency to acquire too much, and how it keeps us trapped in habits and attitudes that make it hard to let go of stuff. Here are a few shocking statistics that Ed helpfully looked up for us. According to the Wall Street Journal, Americans spend $1.2 trillion a year on non-essential items. Trillion, that's shocking. In an article at the Huffington Post, the EPA Office of Solid Waste disclosed that the average American discards more than 68 pounds of clothing per person per year. That's really shocking. Like, how much are you keeping if you're disposing of 68 pounds per year? According to a survey by Closet Made, the average American woman has 103 items of clothing in her wardrobe. 103 items seems low to me based on some of the places that I go, but the idea that you can have 100 items of clothing is amazing. On a personal level, overaccumulation leads to many negative outcomes. And I'm going to make a list here for you. Living with clutter is obviously one of the negative outcomes, that you end up living with a bunch of clutter in the house, and it eats up some of your living space. It also increases your feeling of status anxiety, the stress that's associated with social status, and the perceived need to keep up with the Joneses. And it creates often unmanageable debt burden. You end up spending more than you have and that you're earning, and that your consumer spending puts you in a continuous debit problem. You have too much debt and you've got too many credit cards burning with debt carrying balances on them. And so it creates a burden. It also fundamentally makes people more unhappy. Psychological research has shown that people who organize their lives around consumerist goals, such as product acquisition, report poor moods. They report greater unhappiness in relationships and other psychological problems. Psychological experiments have shown that people exposed to consumerist values based on wealth, status, and material possessions display greater anxiety and depression. And this comes from the Association for Psychological Science. So basically, if you're worried about, do you have the right purse? Do you have the right shoes? Do you have the right labeled furniture in the house? It creates a target that's hard to reach, and it leaves you with a sense of being unhappy because you can't quite get there all the time. That's not fun. So producers and sellers work really hard to get us to acquire more. And I'm going to run through a list here of how they go about getting us to acquire and keep too much stuff. This is really a list of advertising and selling tactics, and we wanted to talk about them so that you had some idea of what you were fighting against without even realizing it, to stop yourself from buying too much. One of the tactics is that store sellers create a false notion of scarcity with limited time offers and sales. They want to get you in the store where you'll be more susceptible to their influence and persuasion. It also works to train you to be on the hunt for a deal that you need to pounce on or when it happens, or you'll miss out. So they create that sense of scarcity so that you will be afraid that you're going to miss out on something. And that prompts you to buy things that you wouldn't in the moment that you wouldn't otherwise buy. They use manipulative pricing. So they call it $1.99 instead of $2 because somehow $1.99 makes the price more attractive to us. Or at the other end of the spectrum, they use prestige pricing, in which a product or service is priced very high to create the impression of luxury or exclusivity. This is one that is a new online version. You have to make a minimum order to make your online purchase eligible for free shipping. This one trick makes us double or triple the amount we'd intended to spend in order to get the free shipping. I see the point of not paying for shipping if you can avoid it, but having to increase your purchase to get it shipped free isn't really free. They offer lists of benefits about how the product or service will make us or our lives better. They're selling products by selling a lifestyle. So this product will make you happier or cleaner or more stylish. They suggest a sex appeal. They're using overt or subliminal messages, or sometimes very, you know, very right in your face.
Overt messages.
Yeah. Very, very overt, to suggest that the product will improve your sex appeal and so improve your chances of having sex. This is a version that Apple is very good at. They create newer models, new colors. Bed Bath & Beyond is always creating new scents, upgrades to products, and new accessories. Once you've bought a particular product, then they start making more models of it. They add accessories. They add functionality. They upgrade it in some way so that you feel like that the one that you got isn't good enough and you have to get the new one, even though the one that you got is still working just fine.
Another great example here is video game consoles, Jaime has a Nintendo Switch, and it's a little, you know, screen about this big that he can play games on. And on the ends are these controllers that come off that, you know, they stand in for the joystick, and you know, have little arrow keys that move you around and jump and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And there was the pair that came with it, but since they're modular, they can also sell you the limited edition,
you know, Mario, other versions.
Mario and Luigi ones, and then the fluorescent orange and yellow ones, and the beautiful, you know, I don't even know. He's got a bunch of them. Well, and you can play a whole bunch of different players, so that you can rationalize, well, what if I have 14 people over to play? You know, it's just,
yeah, it's just selling an accessory that it doesn't add that much. It just gets you to buy something when what you have works just fine.
Yeah.
They're also collecting and mining data about your internet usage and shopping and buying habits and patterns. So anybody that spends time shopping online will have experienced the retargeting concept, the placement of ads for products that we've searched for or that we've recently bought. It may seem silly to advertise to us for things that we've already bought, but they're hoping that we'll want another one, or we'll buy one for someone as a gift, or that we'll be unsatisfied with our purchase and ready to upgrade to a better version. They also plan for obsolescence. So our industries have started manufacturing goods that are intentionally designed to be useful only for a short time before they need to be replaced. Gone is the washing machine that will still be working 30 years from now. They want that thing to die much sooner than that. And so think about your computer. Your computer, they go up to a certain point and then they stop supporting software, hardware, you know, it falls like you've kept that one for too long. We don't care about you anymore. You are now, you know, sailing in the wind alone. And so they stop supporting stuff so that you'll go get something new.
Well, it's even worse with phones.
Yes.
You know, true. The phones seem to start to become obsolete after maybe
20
minutes. Well, yeah, 20 minutes. If, you know, 2 years, if you're patient and tolerant of failure.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. They use celebrity endorsements or social proof in social media sites, all those likes that come through, to make an item more desirable to you. If a celebrity endorses it, then it must be really, really special. They have price wars and price matching to create the illusion that somehow the seller is on your side and not their own. They use loss leaders. You've heard the term loss leaders, a relatively inexpensive item sold near cost or even at a loss just to get you into the store where you will then immediately buy something else. They use even more devious things, like they're acknowledging resistance. So they leverage consumer resistance to manipulation, and advertising is a form of persuasion. They use reverse psychology, goading customers into buying by pretending that's not actually their goal. Misleading visuals like varnished vegetables and spray painted hamburgers and airbrushed models, all things to make the object look so much more perfect. Serving suggestions so that you think, oh, I can make that meal, and that'll make you buy something.
And then when you unwrap that frozen meal, even, you know, you follow the instructions and it looks just not even remotely like that thing. I tried some frozen meals that I was buying for my parents, decided to try one for myself, and so disappointing.
Right. It's all that advertising. So what can we do to stand up for ourselves? Get off the consumption treadmill and shift our thinking. Here are a few strategies for resisting the onslaught of advertising messages and letting go of some stuff. Let's start with how to counter the concept of scarcity or great deals created by sales. Anyone who's been shopping for more than a minute knows there's a sale today, but there's going to be another one just around the corner. From shopping experience, you learn there will always be the next sales coming soon. If you miss this one, you can still catch the next one. But besides that, the underlying idea that this is a great price is only one part of a two-part question about the item. Is it a good price is the question the seller wants you to ask yourself. The next question gets missed a lot, but you should also ask yourself, do I really need this item right now or in the near future, regardless of the fact that it's a good deal? If the answer is no, you can leave the product from this sale and wait to replenish from the next sale when you actually need some product. Lots of people overstock on things they'll use someday because of sales without noticing they've got a 4-year supply of the products at home already. Now let's think about the benefits and lifestyle improvements that are promised by creative ad writers. You have to know there's some creative writing being used. There's no guarantees or any way to prove claims of benefits that are written up in a product's ad. You have to keep in mind as you read, you're just listening to a story that a copywriter at a marketing firm has made up. It's artwork, it's creative storytelling, it's ego stroking. See through the hype and decide for yourself if what you're considering can actually help you, can solve a problem, can give you something that you need or want that you don't already have. And remember, a newer model, another color, a new flavor or scent doesn't change what you already have and haven't used up yet. Don't let yourself buy it just because they came out with new ones. That's a classic psychological trap whose specific purpose is to get you to buy more now before you need it or run out of something. They're trying to induce a repeat buyer well before there's actual need. Don't fall for that hype. Remember what you already have at home and how fast you use that product before you start collecting all the multiple options they've created. It's a good idea to notice how susceptible you are to the various forms of advertising, either in the store or in flyers and catalogs or online via email. If you know that once you see an email, you usually end up buying something, then maybe it's a better idea to unsubscribe from that email. If the catalogs are your instant online shopping trigger, then start recycling those catalogs without looking at them or get off their mailing lists. Remember, you can't miss what you never see. That catalog creates instant desire, but if you never see what's in a catalog, you have nothing to trigger your spending. Do you notice that you're an impulse shopper whenever you go into a store in person? First, then, I try shopping with a list and leaving the store as soon as the listed items are selected. If that doesn't stop you from unintentional overspending in your favorite stores, then the next step is staying out of the store altogether. It might be time to limit your shopping for stores that trigger overspending by buying online only instead. See if online orders help you get away from the checkout with what you intended and not anything else. You want to consider skipping the upsell to get free shipping when you buy online. Either what you're buying is an impulse buy already, and now you're having to buy more to feed that impulse, or you actually need what you're buying, but nothing else. In that case, a shipping fee is just the delivery fee to get it. Maybe instead of buying that one item online, you can go pick it up with curbside delivery to save the shipping. Or you can also rethink whether you actually need this item right now, or can it be added to a shopping list to buy later? Stalling that instant online buy then stops you having to upgrade with extra products to skip the delivery fee. It's a circle that they just keep getting you to add more and more to the final price that you pay. Which leads me right into the next one, which is going to make everybody groan, but financial literacy can teach you how your shopping without restraints affects your budget, affects your cash flow, affects your credit score, and your ability to retire. Overspending and the resulting debt strains your family's ability to respond to financial emergencies. It slows down your retirement savings and it increases your stress and anxiety levels. Whatever fun you have in the moment while shopping is quickly wiped out when the bank statement and the credit card statements get delivered. Learning the basics of financial management and being aware of your financial needs as you shop will help you make better choices and skip purchases that aren't aligned with your financial goals. There's so many ways to learn about managing finances. Check your library, the church, community colleges, city services. You can learn more about your money and how shopping impacts your financial stability, and it can only help change your shopping behavior if you are more conscious about how that shopping is affecting your finances. Thus endeth the very, you know, negative topic. Shopping is doom. And we're laughing about it, and we're trying to make the point that you're contributing to the clutter in your house and what you're having to live with your shopping behavior. And you are actually in an environment where all of the businesses in the universe are trying to make you buy their products, and they're working super, super hard at it. And they've done a lot of research about how to make you pull that trigger. And so you have to be aware of how they're trying to manipulate you and how they're trying to get you to spend money that you don't have and that you don't can't afford in order to get things that you don't need and that you already have multiples of in your house. And so we want you to be aware of that and let those filters be in front of you as you are trying to make decisions about how to spend money. It can only help slow you down. And anything that, you know, puts some gap between you and the money leaving your hand is a good thing. And if you don't end up buying as much, then you don't have to declutter as much on the back end. And that's what we're trying to aim for here.
Well, and I think being aware of these things gives you more power over them. If you're aware of how your emotions get manipulated and the assumption, you know, the assumptions that they're trying so hard to trigger in you, it's easier to go, nope, you're not getting me with that.
And, I'm not going for that.
You know, like one of the things I've tried to train myself to do in the grocery store is completely ignore the end caps, because they all on the end caps, they tend to put the highest margin things because they're hard to, it's hard to avoid. They're more prominent. And you, also in the grocery store, they put all the highest, you know, the things that earn the highest profit margin are all around eye level. I'm fortunate because my eye level is about, you know, 10 inches above the average person's eye level. So I'm looking at, you know, some second tier products up there. But Elaine, who's watching on Facebook, said, I was so good at ignoring marketing tactics, just bought what I really needed until I got a puppy. Now I'm getting things from her almost every time I shop. I need to hear this today and get back to reality. Thanks for this timely subject.
That's just the version for people that don't have children, right? When you get an animal, it's not you, it's them. And you're just loving them by spending more money on them.
Yeah, well, but that's a lifestyle that they love to sell because they know people love to watch. And, and you know, another thing that I read in looking at consumerist tactics, advertising tactics, was one thing they do is anthropomorphizing. And so, you know, people who are trying to protect the environment show you animals in this way that makes them more relatable. And they also anthropomorphize to try and sell things to you. And to, you know, they want to convince you that your dog really wants all those toys. And your dog, of course, cares about whichever toy is in his or her face right now and doesn't give another thought to all the toys that are hidden away in the toy box.
And is not dreaming of toys that he hasn't bought yet, like rest of us. Exactly.
Connie says, organizer Jess Marcy introduced me to a fun acronym I think of when shopping. CUTE. C-U-T-E. Can't use that ever.
I like it. I like it. It could be applied to a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
It's adorable. It's cute, but I can't use that thing ever. That's awesome.
And Susan shared a link to a YouTube video and said, I watched this in the past week and they said U.S. children represent 3% of the world's children, but possess 40% of the world's toys.
Oh my God.
the documentary is called A Cluttered Life, Middle Class Abundance. It follows a team of UCLA anthropologists as they venture into the stuffed to capacity homes of dual income, middle class American families in order to truly understand the food, toys, and clutter that fill them. That sounds very interesting. A Cluttered Life, Middle Class Abundance.
And that doesn't surprise me at all.
I'll share the YouTube link in the show notes.
Okay. I have been in a million places with little kids and their rooms are completely out of control and the parents are tearing their hair out and they've contributed to it. And the grandparents can like somehow when the grandparents start buying for the grandkids, all reason escapes and it goes out the window and everybody in the world is a grandparent. Buys 47 million more things than they need to give to that grandkid because they're trying to build relationship. They're trying to be the special grandparent. They're trying to be the one that kids pay attention to. And they also feel like I'm old and I can spend my money now on what I want. I'm not struggling. I'm accomplished and I'm not taking care of kids at home anymore. And so I have disposable income that I can waste on my grandkids. And what better place to do it except to make the grandkids happy. And the end result of that is that those bedrooms that I wade into are so drowning and the kids don't have the mental capacity to deal with that much choice anyway. It's so overwhelming and overstimulating to them to have that much stuff there. And I think that the kids really find it stressful and difficult to manage anyway. And then the parents are the ones trying to clean up all the, keep up with it all, corral it all, organize it all. And then, you know, what does a 2-year-old do or a 4-year-old do? They go in and open whatever that bin is and pull everything out because that's what they do. They think that's fun. And so there's no keeping it clean with a little kid. And so the larger the pile, the more chaos for everybody. And it's too bad that doesn't surprise me, but it's too bad. 40% of stuff for 2% of the kids. Oh, that's amazing.
3% of the kids.
3% still. Yeah.
Connie says on the subject of planned obsolescence, the green parties in the European Union are trying to get a law that makes that illegal.
Ooh, that'd be helpful.
That'd be nice, right?
That would slow down.
And also on that topic, Jane said, my laptop literally failed after 3.5 years. The warranty expired at 3 years. And
isn't that sad and not surprising?
Someone said, let's see, I have lost it here, but I think it was on Facebook that someone said iPhones have a self-destruct mechanism. And that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not entirely. They do this thing, this controversial thing where, as I understand it, they slow down the process. They slow down the process cycle so that older phones are not overwhelmed by things that newer operating systems are expecting them to do. But it does, you know, the way that is perceived by users is you're trying to make my phone harder to use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I work here on this, I have a MacBook Pro and it's about 7 years old, but it sat on the shelf for some period of that. I bought it in 2016 new. And so it's only had 5-something years of use. And I am having a problem with my keyboard and I took it into an Apple authorized dealer or service place. And they said, oh, we're sorry, that is considered vintage or obsolete, you know, 5 years old for crying out loud. Right? So they won't service it. I have to take it to a non-authorized service place right. That will attempt to fix it. Cause I'd like to eke another year or two of use out of it before I replace it.
Before you have to plunk down many thousands of dollars to get a new one. Yeah, I get it.
Randy says, you may have talked me out of buying the Clinique holiday deal at Macy's.
Yay.
Oh, and that's not really a that's not really a topic we touched on, but a lot of retailers have their, you know, every Christmas we have this ornament or this figurine or Hallmark does something, right? Figurines.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a holiday ornament.
And,
and Clinique and their holiday special. Right. And I know that they're trying to package it so that you can buy it as gifts, but they're also trying to get the people that use their stuff regularly to buy more product because it's only available during the holidays, that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah. And you have plenty of stuff and they'll still have stuff there. And they'll still be making sales later in the year to try to get you to get something. I mean, it's all just a version of trying to make you buy some more, even though you haven't run out. Yeah. Good for you. Go team, go. You don't need it.
On the subject of retargeting, which is that practice of showing you things that you've looked at online, Wolf, who's watching on Facebook, said, I was reading about Sikhism and Islam the other day, and now I'm getting ads for hijabs. How about that?
That's some targeted marketing, isn't it?
Seriously.
Oh, well, luckily you won't have to buy those.
And Wolf also added, I only open the advertising emails when I'm planning to purchase something from that store to check for coupons. That's a great idea because some of them, Walgreens, oh my gosh, Walgreens just buries me in emails.
I know, right? It's just nonstop. The other one that buries me in emails is SiriusXM. They keep trying to get me to upgrade the service that I have in the car to something that then works in the house or whatever. And they send me something twice a week. And it's like, okay, I've had this since 2019. I have never upgraded. What about I'm not going to upgrade? Do you not understand? Leave me alone. And no, they just keep, they just keep letting me have it. And it must work or they wouldn't keep doing it. Like they would not invest in a process that doesn't generate revenue for them, that they can prove generates revenue for them. And so it must work. Yeah. And so it's something that I have to resist all the time in order to not be spending money. I'm happy with my SiriusXM as it is. I don't need anything else. I don't need it in the house. It's all fine. I have to say that this is something that you get better at as you get older, right?
Yeah.
You get more understanding of how you're being manipulated, and you also stop being excited about every new thing that comes around because you know that there's always new things, and you stop worrying about the sale because you know another sale's coming. And so they lose some of their efficacy over time as you age and get experience in shopping. I think this is particularly hard and part of why financial responsibility and literacy is important for people that are younger, because they don't quite get, as they're starting to shop and have money to spend of their own, that their impulse buying is affecting them in a financial environment. It affects their financial future to be buying another pair of shoes for $400.
Yeah. Catherine says pickup at grocery store keeps you from extra purchases, which is a good point. You're locked into the list that you've ordered. There are no impulse buys, no last minute things.
Right.
I love to shop at grocery stores. It's the one kind of shopping I enjoy. And I picked up some stuff for Dad the other day, and there was one item I couldn't find. And so I went to a store that I have stopped going to because I don't like their politics. And it's a fabulous store. It's beautiful and it's bright and it's clean. And the aisles are wider than some of the other stores. It's very brightly lighted and has a white tile floor. It's very appealing. And I realized that part of what I liked about it was it's bright. It's easy to see everything. It's easy to read labels. It's inviting in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when we were
environment is soothing and inducing.
Yeah. It's easy to spend time there, you know, and, you know, as we were preparing this, I shared with you the phrase from my Catholic upbringing, which is avoid the near occasion of sin, meaning, you know, if you overeat candy, don't keep candy around. You know, yeah. if you are seduced by a beautiful grocery store, then you might be better off shopping at a dumpy grocery store where all you want to do is get in, buy what's on your list, and get out.
You know? Right. Well, I mean, in every store that puts any money in merchandising is creating that look that it's the music is nice, the lighting is nice, the displays are beautiful, and it's lovely to look at. And that's all designed to keep you in the store looking at more things and buying more things. Yeah. And so it may be fun to go and experience that. And if you find that it is not something that you can resist in terms of buying, then in spending money, then maybe it's better to not have the experience than to go and use up a bunch of money that you don't have or you don't want to spend on stuff that you don't need and have to declutter later. If you can go through the store and enjoy the environment and find it soothing and pleasant to look at pretty things and go out empty-handed, more power to you. You're stronger than the average person. And if you can't do that, then get in and get out, man. Don't stand there and be seduced by how pretty everything looks. They're working super hard to make it happen that way.
Here's a great comment from Linda, Pennsylvania Linda. She says, reminder to self, I have enough. I am enough. And that's terrific, because that speaks to what I think is the most insidious feature of consumerist practices, which is trying to convince people that they are not enough.
That something's wrong.
And that there's something they can buy that's going to fix them, fulfill them.
Make them prettier, smarter, taller, you know, happier. Yeah,
more popular.
Whatever your version of happier is, they're absolutely simultaneously trying to tell you that you're not good enough and their stuff will make you good enough. And that is just such a false message on every possible level. And don't listen. That's what I'm saying. Don't listen. Yeah. Don't believe it. And you're right. You are enough, and you have enough, and you are enough, and the end.
Anya said, I fell for a food processor because I failed noticing that no ad or video mentioned how much work cleaning that huge thing is, although it can be run in the dishwasher. I wish I still had the money with this experience.
Right. And that is a perfect example of, yeah, when the guys are writing the copywriting ads, their goal is not to write the truth about the product. Their goal is to write the good stuff about the product,
yeah,
and make that seem like all there is. When, yeah, you know, indeed a food processor is a hot mess to clean up and, you know, you better be ready to use it all the time and spend a whole bunch of time in cleanup, which I have to say as a non-cook annoys me to no end. Like the longer it keeps me in the kitchen, the more angry I am by the time I get out. So no, that would be a fail for me 100%. Totally get that.
Yeah. Yeah. Joyce said, Anya, that's what's holding me back from buying an Instant Pot. Do I really want to find space to store it and make the effort to clean it? And you know what they don't tell you about the Instant Pot is to clean the lid, there are these four little things that you have to take off or take apart and then worry about having them go down the drain. There's a little, you know, the little thing that the steam comes out, and there's a little tiny silicone gasket and the little metal stem that goes on the gasket and a little cover that goes over the place where the steam vents from the inside. All four of those things have to be taken off before you can run. And also there's a gasket, great big gasket that seals it. So five things have to be taken off before the lid can run through the dishwasher.
Or else you have to wash it all by hand.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You have to take it apart to wash it thoroughly in any case.
How annoying.
You know, another thing that I learned through experience is how overpriced a lot of consumer products actually are. And where the evidence of that is clear is, so Best Buy, I'm not trying to rag on any one retailer, but this is Best Buy's thing. They have a deal of the day. Mm-hmm. And every single day there's something that posts at like 1 a.m. And I know someone who is checking at 1 a.m. every day to see what the deal of the day is, because sometimes they sell out. And they're deep discounts on things that you could buy any other day for a whole lot more. And it just sort of, you know, if they can periodically discount the Instant Pot to $60, then you know that that $110 suggested retail price is ridiculous.
Yeah, is way inflated.
Yeah.
It's a good point. And if you are checking at 1 o'clock in the morning to see what the deal of the day is every day, you're going to Vegas, baby. You're like playing the slot machine of shopping in order to see what the deal is. And, you know, I have BD Facebook groups that I follow that are sellers. They come on and, you know, every night or every other night, they come on and list five or six things and during this time period. And here's the new things I'm putting on. It's like, oh God, you know, I am 1,000 times better off if I do not go click and look at the group when she says I'm getting ready to start listing things, because inevitably I go through and I end up thinking I have to buy something and I don't need anything. So it's important for me to ignore, you know, or go and say, okay, I'm just going to look at the pretty pictures. I'm not going to buy something. And sometimes I can flip through and go, oh, isn't that pretty, and move on and not click the button. And, but it is that whole, they've created in social media, particularly this instant, you know, here's the window, here's when you buy it. And it's like playing the slot machine. You're in there clicking, clicking, clicking. And it's like nothing else. And you don't have to succumb. You don't have to go there. You don't have to go at 1 o'clock in the morning and look at the listing. And at that point, I would be like, okay, I'm on a Best Buy moratorium. I cannot go to the website for a week or 2 weeks, or I can only go on Sundays, or I, you know, make some rules to slow that down, because that is crazy addiction sounding.
Yeah.
For sure.
A person who is new in today's Zoom meeting asks, where do we find the show notes? So I'm going to show the slide again that has the URL. Every okay. week after we edit the video and post it on YouTube, we put together a post on the website that has a summary of the show and a link to YouTube and a link to the podcast and the text of the weekly tittle.
And other things that we've, like, if we mentioned something, yeah, like he's talking about, if we've
mentioned a link, yeah,
we'll put it in there in the show notes.
And so you can visit by, you know, late evening Eastern time, this will be in place. So you go to cfhou.com/TCFW, the Clutter Fairy Weekly 092, which is today's episode. And you can also just visit clutterfairhouston.com and find all of the episodes with links to YouTube and the podcast and so forth. We should get to some announcements because we are running out of time.
Okay.
Let's see. I want to mention next week's show. We'll be back next Tuesday, November 2nd. At the usual time, noon US Central. And I think we will be out of sync with Europe next week, because I think they roll back their time. I think they roll back time on Sunday. And so please make note that noon US Central time will be an hour out of whack from the usual time next week. Next week only, and then we'll be back in sync the following week, I think. So for most people, a clutter problem doesn't spring up overnight. It's the result of long-term habits of delaying decisions, ignoring minor messes, and accumulating new stuff faster than you eliminate old stuff. In our next episode, we're going to talk about how to stem the flow of clutter at the source by incorporating some key decluttering habits into every day. Join us November 2nd for One Day at a Time, establishing daily decluttering routines. Let's go to the tittle.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this week our tittle is consumption be done about all this stuff, which is Ed's pun of the week. So
it seemed like time for a bad pun.
Right? This week's assignment is to examine your home and habits for evidence of consumerism clutter. Try one of these suggestions. Scan your living space for an item that you bought on the basis of unrealistic advertising, but now it's become clutter, and let it go out of the house. Let it go on somebody else. Are you holding on to an oversupply of something that you purchased at a dramatic sale price? You might want to consider giving away or donating some of that excess. The fact that you have a 4-year supply is probably unnecessary. And maybe you can keep a 1-year supply or a 6-month supply and let the rest go and help somebody else right now. You can look to unsubscribe from a retail's email list, like the Best Buy Daily Deal, or visit catalogchoice.org to remove yourself from one or more catalog mailing lists. When you do this, you have to go in and you find the catalog name, the company, the retailer name, and then there's choices to be made about, do you want the holiday catalog? Do you want one catalog? You can go in and select. It's very detailed about how much you can subtract or add yourself to their list. And so if you get one every week, but you only want the one during the holiday, or you don't want any of them, you can go and say, take me off the list. You just have to remember that this is an email list that retailers voluntarily subscribe to and download from. And so while you unsubscribe today, it's going to take a little while for that to filter into their mailing list and have their mailing list get updated. So if you do it now, it may not stop it immediately, but you'll start to see a slow dropping of those catalogs coming to your house over time. Over a few months, you should see most of it drop away if you go in and select all the ones that are coming to your house. It's important to do the work. You know, it's going to be time consuming to get all of your catalogs, but if you're drowning in them, you might as well do this the one time and then stop having to filter and recycle over and over and over again in the future. So you're trading a little bit of work up now for much less work on the backside. You can also identify a category of buying where you tend to overspend. Consider implementing a strict budget or a shopping list for this specific category of stuff. So if you always buy too much body wash, then you can make a list and say a budget for body wash and say, I'm only allowed to buy one a month, or I'm only allowed to buy one a quarter, and set yourself a parameter around which you can't shop on that specific thing. Sometimes just a budget or a shopping list on a specific item or category is easier to manage than a whole financial budget around everything that you're doing. You just want to focus on the stuff where you get triggered to overbuy. And so we're hoping that you'll look at that and see. Okay. Give it a shot.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To receive notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. Oh, also, if you subscribe, you will get a weekly email with a link to the show notes. So that can,
that will be
your reminder if you want to circle back to the show notes. We love to hear from you, so please send us your questions, comments, and topic suggestions in the YouTube comments, on Facebook, or anywhere else that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate seeing you, and we will be back next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.